The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Dr. Scott Youngkin for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Health Issues for the next half hour. I'll be reading articles, at least initially, from the Harvard Heart Letter. This is a issue of the Harvard Heart Letter from October 2024. And this issue begins with an article entitled "Time for a Medication Checkup." Some people would benefit from either stopping or switching the drugs they take for heart-related problems. Upgrading your pill organizer is a time-honored tradition associated with aging. Many older people take multiple medications, which typically include drugs for common problems like high blood pressure, high cholesterol, or diabetes, as well as those to treat heart conditions like atrial fibrillation. But taking more than five daily medications, what doctors call polypharmacy, comes with risks, especially for seniors. An estimated 1 in 5 prescription medications taken by older people is inappropriate. Many of those are cardiovascular drugs that are potentially harmful, have no clear benefit, or aren't as good as other options. These should be stopped or switched, according to a review published June 14, 2024, in the European Heart Journal. For perspective and advice on this problem, we consulted Dr. Howard Lewine, an internist at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital, who's known for his dedication to de-prescribing, that is, eliminating unnecessary medication. Some of the older patients I care for take as many as 15 pills every day, if you include multivitamins and supplements, says Dr. Lewine, who is also a chief medical editor at Harvard Health Publishing. Don't get me wrong, I love that we have all these medications that have made people's lives better, he adds. But as people age, they may develop different health problems and consult a range of specialists, including cardiologists, endocrinologists, and orthopedists, for example, each of whom prescribes new medications. People may stay on these drugs for years, even when there is no good reason to continue. They may also take non-prescription products like fish oil, vitamins, and other supplements. Not only does polypharmacy raise the risk of worrisome side effects like bleeding or low blood pressure, it's also a waste of money. Read on for specific tips about stopping or switching medications for heart disease and related conditions. And the first heading is treating high blood pressure. While more than 200 different drugs can lower blood pressure, the most commonly prescribed ones belong to a handful of drug classes. Over time, as new options reach pharmacy shelves and evidence about their effectiveness and safety accumulates, advice about the optimal classes and combinations shifts. One class that's falling out of favor is beta blockers. These are not the best option for treating high blood pressure and are no longer routinely recommended for long-term use after a heart attack. Also, taking one with a calcium channel blocker can lead to severe dizziness. Of course, beta blockers are safe and appropriate for certain people, but if you take one for high blood pressure, a drug from a different class, like an angiotensin receptor blocker or a thiazide diuretic, may make more sense, explains Dr. Lewine. In any case, don't stop taking a beta blocker abruptly. This can cause a rapid rise in your heart rate, possibly triggering chest pain. Preventing heart attacks. For decades, doctors recommended low-dose aspirin to most middle-aged and older adults to help prevent a first heart attack. But the latest guidelines advise taking aspirin only if you've already had a heart attack or are at very high risk for one. If you don't have cardiovascular disease, the risk of bleeding from taking aspirin often outweighs the heart attack prevention benefit, Dr. Lewine says. However, the advice about the other mainstay for preventing heart attack, cholesterol-lowering statins, is a different story. If your doctor has prescribed a statin, keep taking it, even if you're in your 80s. Research published in the June 2024 issue of Annals of Internal Medicine suggests that statins lower cardiovascular disease in people age 75 and older without any added risk of side effects. In effect, the benefits and safety were apparent even in people 85 and older. One caveat, if you take simvastatin or Zocor, consider switching to atorvastatin or Lipitor or rosuvastatin, Crestor, as both are more effective options with fewer drug interactions. The European Heart Journal review also recommends stopping niacin, which has no cardiovascular benefit and may have unpleasant side effects. People should also take care when using the popular pain relievers called NSAIDs. These are drugs like, for example, Advil or Motrin. The standard advice is to take the smallest dose for the shortest period of time, since long-term use of these drugs can increase the risk of heart attack and stroke. Managing diabetes. The American Diabetes Association continues to recommend metformin as a first-line drug treatment of type 2 diabetes. The review specifically recommends that people avoid drugs called DPP-4 inhibitors, like Januvia and saxagliptin. But these older drugs are rarely prescribed these days, Dr. Lewine says. Today, far better add-on medications for people with type 2 diabetes are either the GLP-1 receptor agonists or the SGLT2 inhibitors. These drugs not only lower blood sugar levels, but also reduce the risk of cardiovascular issues and premature death. Avoiding atrial fibrillation risks. People with atrial fibrillation typically take medications to reduce their risk of stroke, usually one of the anti-clotting drugs known as direct oral anticoagulants, which include Xarelto and Eliquis. For the most part, those who still take warfarin, an older drug, should consider switching because DOACs are safer and more effective. The exception is people who have a mechanical heart valve, who should stay on warfarin. Also, anyone who starts taking a DOAC but is already taking aspirin should definitely check to see if they should stop the aspirin, since both drugs increase the risk of bleeding. DOACs are more expensive, but generic versions are coming in the near future. What you can do. First, make sure you understand the reason you take each of your prescribed drugs. If you aren't sure, ask the prescribing doctor for an explanation. Ideally, your primary care provider should review all your prescription medications, plus any over-the-counter drugs or supplements you take regularly, at least once a year. Check the list of medications in your online health portal to ensure the names and doses of the drugs recorded there match what you're currently taking. Finally, if your blood pressure, cholesterol, or blood sugar values are close to ideal levels, losing weight, improving your diet, including drinking less alcohol, and getting more exercise may allow you to lower or eliminate certain medications. And then there's a brief attached article. It is called Fish Oil, Vitamins, and Other Supplements. What about the many non-prescription pills people often take for heart health? These products almost always fall squarely into the lack of benefit category, including one of the most popular. And that by this they mean fish oil supplements. Likewise, multiple studies have shown no heart-related benefits from taking multivitamins. And two other supplements, coenzyme Q10 and vitamin D, which are often touted for treating muscle-related pain linked to statin use, have not proved helpful for that problem. Now we're going to just briefly go over the section called Ask the Doctor by Dr. Christopher Cannon, who's the editor-in-chief of the Harvard Heart Letter. And the first story in this section is entitled Different Types of Rapid Heart Rhythms. And the question that Dr. Cannon is asked is, what is the difference between atrial fibrillation and supraventricular tachycardia? And Dr. Cannon responds, while both conditions are rapid abnormal heart rhythms that originate in the upper part of the heart, they tend to develop at different ages and they require different treatments. Atrial fibrillation, or AFib, is more common and affects mostly people age 65 and older. Supraventricular tachycardia can strike at any age, even in young children, but the average age of diagnosis is 45. Atrial fib is a rapid, chaotic heart rhythm triggered by errant electrical signals in the heart's upper left chamber. These signals fire in an irregular pattern over 300 times per minute, causing the atria to quiver rather than beat normally. The heart's lower chambers also beat irregularly. The ventricles may not have time to fill and pump blood to the body, which can lead to breathlessness and fatigue. People with AFib may need medications that help slow down the heart. They may also need anti-clotting medication to prevent clots from forming in the atria, which can occur when blood stagnates due to the atria's lack of normal movement. If a clot escapes the heart, it can travel to the brain and cause a stroke. With SVT, that's supraventricular tachycardia, the errant electrical signal comes from above the ventricles, either in the left or right atrium, or more often in the atrioventricular node between the atria and the ventricles. These abnormal signals override the normal signal, creating a series of fast heartbeats. These fast rhythms are regular and cause both the atria and ventricles to beat very rapidly, as much as 200 beats per minute. Supraventricular tachycardia lasts just a few seconds, people say it feels as though their heart is flip-flopping or fluttering. But if it lasts for more than a few minutes, sometimes the heart doesn't have time to fill completely. Just as with AFib, the resulting decrease in blood flow to the body and brain can cause a person to feel breathless, dizzy, or lightheaded. Treatments include simple tricks to slow the heart, like coughing or gagging. They also include medications and ablation procedures. If you feel a prolonged fluttering sensation in your chest or a rapid irregular heartbeat, check with your doctor. Physicians usually order a patch monitor that records the heart's electrical activity for 2 to 4 weeks. Certain smart watches that can record a brief EKG may be able to detect atrial fibrillation. They can also save the record, which you can share with your doctor. Both of these devices are helpful tools to help distinguish between SVT and atrial fibrillation. Now here's another article in the Harvard Heart Letter. This is the October 2024 issue, and it's entitled Carbs, Cutting Through the Confusion. For heart health, what are the best sources and amounts of this key nutrient? Carbohydrates, along with protein and fat, are the three major nutrients your body needs to function well. A wide range of foods, including black beans, bread, and bananas, contain carbohydrates. But the unique mix of fiber, starches, and sugar, the three main components of carbohydrates, in carbohydrate-rich foods, can affect your health in different ways. Carbohydrates can definitely be confusing, and many of the patients I work with have questions about them, says Nancy Oliveira, a registered dietitian and manager of the Nutrition and Wellness Service at Harvard-affiliated Brigham and Women's Hospital. People who want to lose weight or better control their diabetes often try to cut back on carbs. But I always emphasize that including some carbohydrate in your diet is important especially in terms of cardiovascular health, she adds. Many carbohydrate-rich foods are good sources of other vital nutrients, like folic acid, vitamins C and E, and magnesium. High-quality choices include whole grains, legumes, vegetables, and fruits. But what makes these foods especially healthy is they're full of fiber. Fiber breaks down in the large intestine, providing food for gut bacteria that produce short-chain fatty acids. These and other fiber components confer a range of health benefits, including lowering cholesterol, blood pressure, inflammation, and body weight. Starches are the most common consumed form of carbohydrate. Cereal grains like rice, wheat, and corn, and root vegetables like white potatoes and sweet potatoes, have a particularly high starch content, as do peas and some winter squashes. Like fiber, starches are considered complex carbohydrates. Their complex chemical structure means the body needs to break them down into simple sugar molecules. However, Americans tend to favor foods made from highly processed grains, like white rice and white flour, which have been stripped of their fiber and other nutrients. French fries and potato chips aren't great dietary choices because of the added fat they contain, but there's no reason to avoid potatoes and other starchy vegetables. I like to microwave baby potatoes to have alongside a piece of salmon and a salad, says Oliveira. Not only are potatoes filling, they're a good source of potassium, which helps to lower blood pressure. Unlike fiber and starch, sugars are simple molecules that are digested quickly, which can cause blood sugar spikes and dips. Whole fruit contains natural sugars, but also fiber and other nutrients that help to moderate those spikes. But that's not the case for the sugar in sodas, candy, and sugary desserts. Occasional treats are fine, but over time, a diet high in sweets can make the body less sensitive to insulin, the hormone that regulates blood sugar. The resulting insulin resistance triggers weight gain, inflammation, and other factors that contribute to the artery clogging plaque that's responsible for most heart disease. Unless you have diabetes and need to track your carbohydrate intake for adjusting your insulin dose, there's no real reason to count the grams of carbohydrate you consume each day. Instead of focusing on numbers, I like to use visual clues, says Oliveira. When you eat carbohydrate-rich foods, aim for a serving size that's about the size of your fist, which works whether you're having grains, beans, a starchy vegetable, or a piece of fruit. For the main meal of your day, you can fill up to roughly one-third of your plate with foods high in carbohydrates, a combination of fiber-rich grain or starchy vegetable, and a small amount of fruit. For breakfast, it's nice to have some carbs to provide energy after your overnight fast, says Oliveira. Healthy choices include oatmeal or breads made with 100% whole grain. Now, again in the Harvard Heart Letter, here's an article entitled, What is a Leadless Pacemaker? If a slow or abnormal heart rhythm makes you dizzy or breathless or causes you to faint, you may need a pacemaker. These battery-powered devices constantly monitor your heartbeat, and if needed, send an electrical pulse to trigger a beat. As many as 3 million Americans have a pacemaker, and each year another 200,000 get one. Implanted in 1958, the very first pacemaker had multiple components, including a pulse generator about the size of a hockey puck. A modern-day generator has a pulse generator about the size of two stacked silver dollars. This is implanted under the skin by the collarbone and connected to the heart by one or more flexible wires called leads. But today, there are also leadless pacemakers no bigger than a multiple vitamin pill, an advance that has dramatically reduced the risk of complications from these procedures. If you have any type of foreign object, a pacemaker or an artificial joint, for example, inside your body, infection can be a serious problem. If you have pneumonia, urinary tract infection, or a skin infection, bacteria can circulate through the bloodstream and may accumulate on the pacemaker, says Dr. Theophany Mella, director of the pacemaker and ICD clinic at Harvard-affiliated Massachusetts General Hospital. Pacemaker leads are about 2 feet long, which means that traditional devices have more surface area and are therefore more likely to become infected than leadless devices, she explains. In addition, the pulse generator is inserted in a small pocket just under the skin of the upper chest. In about 1 to 3% of cases, infection develops from bacteria that enter the pocket when a pacemaker is first implanted or replaced. Other complications can occur over time. Leads can become dislodged, wear out, fray, or even break. Scar tissue or blood clots can form around the leads, which may hinder blood flow and cause pain and swelling. With leadless pacemaker, the implantation process is simpler and safer. A doctor inserts a catheter through a vessel in the groin and delivers the device into the wall of the heart. No pulse generator or wires are needed. In the first 3 years after implantation, the complication rate is 4.1% for leadless pacemakers, compared to 8.5% for traditional pacemakers, according to a study published in April 2024 in the European Heart Journal. Approved by the FDA in 2016, the first leadless pacemaker was a single unit placed in the heart's lower right chamber. These early devices were appropriate for about 20% of people who were candidates for a pacemaker. The first generation devices had limited features, but over time, researchers have perfected them, and now leadless pacemakers can do almost anything traditional pacemakers can do, says Dr. Mella. In 2023, the FDA approved the first dual-chamber leadless pacemaker, which features a second chamber in the heart's upper chamber. The two devices communicate wirelessly with each other to better coordinate the heart's contractions. A leadless pacemaker costs 2 to 3 times as much as a traditional pacemaker. However, the higher price may be justified if you take into account the lower rate of complications, which sometimes requires removing the pulse generator and implanting a new one. Because leadless pacemakers are relatively new, doctors have less experience with what happens with them over the long term. When the battery runs out after 10 years, can you safely extract the device and place a new one? We don't really know, Dr. Mella says. One possibility is to place a new device close to the first one. Possible limitations with that strategy include inadequate space and interference between the devices. For now, her practice implants leadless pacemakers mainly in older people who are less likely to need multiple replacements during their lifetime. Leadless pacemaker technology continues to evolve, including systems with batteries that last up to 17 years. Preliminary findings suggest the possibility of using electrical energy from heartbeats to partially recharge the device's battery. If your doctor says you need a pacemaker, ask if you're a candidate for a leadless device, Dr. Mella advises. And now here's a few brief articles from Research We're Watching. The first is, more evidence links flu infection to heart attack risk. A diagnosis of influenza or the flu was linked to a six-fold risk of having a heart attack over the following week, according to a study in the June 25, 2024 issue of NEJM Evidence. The study included adults aged 35 and older who were tested for respiratory viruses over a 12-year period ending in 2019. The testing revealed more than 23,000 separate cases of influenza. Researchers then compared the incidence of heart attack during the risk period, the week after a positive test, to the control period 1 year before and 51 weeks after the risk period. Heart attacks were 6 times more likely to occur during the risk period versus the control period. Earlier research has consistently shown a heightened risk of heart attack soon after viral infections like the flu, as well as the common cold and COVID-19. The findings are a good reminder to get your annual flu vaccine if you haven't already. On average, the vaccine can reduce your chance of getting the flu by about 50%. And very briefly, gratitude has been linked to longer life and fewer heart-related deaths. Cultivating gratitude may help older women live longer, a new study shows. The findings were published in 2024 in JAMA Psychiatry and suggest that most of this benefit comes from preventing deaths from heart disease. The study included more than 49,000 nurses who were about 79 years old. 3 years later, about 10% had died, most commonly of heart disease. Those with the highest levels of gratitude had a 9% lower risk of dying. Writing down a few small things you're grateful for, an uplifting conversation, a beautiful view, a treasured possession, is a popular way to foster gratitude. Well, it looks like we've run out of time for today's episode of Health Issues. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Dr. Scott Youngkin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Health Issues is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service. Thank you.